This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by
Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org. Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Summer offers the promise of a little slower pace to life and maybe a little more time to kick back and open up a book. For some, that means finding the perfect escapist beach read, like the latest Stephen King novel. For others, it's that classic tome that they never quite got to, like Gone with the Wind or even War and Peace. Or maybe your summer reading project is to reread all the works of a favorite author, from Kurt Vonnegut to J.K. Rowling. Whatever your aspirations, we have lots of ideas for you because it's our annual summer book show. And with us are two New Hampshire indie booksellers on what's been flying off their shelves. Also, a local librarian is here on how she's advising library patrons looking for that perfect vacation book. So let's hear from you. Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And by the way, all the books mentioned this hour and our guests' recommendations will be on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. With me in studio, Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter. Dan, nice to see you.
It's such a pleasure to be here, Laura.
And Michael Herman is here, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. And Michael, welcome back.
Hi, Laura. Great to be here.
And also with us, Lori Fisher. She's the librarian director at the Baker Free Library in Bow. And Lori, good to have you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, all of you want to start with fiction because for me anyway, I know not everybody, but for me anyway, summer's about pulling out that great, great novel. And how about you, Dan? Top two novels for the summer?
Well, if I had to pick just two, you're going to make me do that, right?
Well, we can talk. He's got a bunch of books here, and you can see the pictures on our website.
Right,
but yeah, pick two.
I'll lead off with Kate Atkinson's A God in Ruins. Kate Atkinson has been a book club favorite, especially with her previous book, Life After Life. This is a companion to that, and but it's not the same. And this is Stephanie Kuiper is recommending that book. So God in Ruins by Kate Atkinson. And then Roland Marullo is finishing up his trilogy, Breakfast and Lunch with Buddha, by providing us with Dinner with Buddha. And he was just in the shop last week talking to a huge crowd. He's probably the most well-read fiction writer in Exeter. It's amazing how it's happened, but there's just been a network of people that have promoted his books in the town of Exeter, and we sell no one's novels more than Roland Marullo's.
Really? No, I have not even heard of that series, Dan.
Yeah, no.
How has that escaped me?
You know, it's one of those things where we have these communities of readers, and they communicate with each other, and it just kind of blossoms out from, you know, little nodes everywhere. It's really, well, we're right on mission when we're building community around the written word. So we've done that with our patrons and our booksellers for Roland Marullo's books. And
okay.
Dinner with Buddha is a great it's a great novel that tells a road trip story, but it also kind of it deals with ordinary spirituality, what he calls ordinary spirituality. A man named Otto and his brother-in-law, Rinpoche, they're on a road trip, and it turns out his brother-in-law is a bit of the Buddha. So,
wow.
Yeah,
okay,
They're great novels, all three of them.
Your top two, Michael Herman.
Oh, well, it's hard
new
to
novels,
narrow it,
yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to narrow it down. I'm gonna cheat on this question a little bit because what I'm going to recommend that people do is start with novels that are new and on the bestseller list, but actually go back and read the entire range of books of that character. I have a beach read. You know, it's 55 degrees and raining right now, so it's not a day for the beach, but eventually it will be. So when you get to the beach, Nelson DeMille, before Dan Brown, before Lee Child, or most of today's thriller writers got their start, there was Nelson DeMille. And he's still writing really well. His latest novel is called Radiant Angel, and it's near the top of the bestseller list. The main character is John Corey. This is the seventh Corey novel. The series began with Plum Island in 1997. He's a retired New York police detective. He retired because he was shot. He needed time to recuperate, and so, of course, he embarks on a second career, even more dangerous career, with the fictional anti-terrorist branch of the FBI. The reason this is a great beach read is the main character. He's very smart. He's intuitive. He's charismatic. He's a real lateral thinker. He's also childish and annoying. He's the archetypal loose cannon. He does really well with the ladies, and he lets you know it. He's kind of a jerk, but he's the kind of jerk that, you know, a lot of the guys who read this book will want to identify with.
He's a lovable jerk.
Secretly. He's kind of a lovable jerk, yeah. You know, he's like I don't know. He's very annoying, but he's also fun. He's the guy who makes bad jokes but can thwart the terrorist plot, you know.
Latest book and then binge read the whole series.
You can start with the latest book, but I would start with Plum Island and just go through all seven. It's like 3,000 pages of wonderful reading. It's a lot of fun, just addictive like popcorn.
Great. All right. So I'm sensing a spiritual theme here, guys. A God in Ruins, Buddha, the Buddha series, and Radiant Angel.
Radiant Angel refers to a nuclear plot. So it's not as spiritual as one would think.
So, Lori, how about you? Top two novels for the summer, maybe not so new, but very satisfying summer fiction.
What we're seeing across the state in New Hampshire, and I did talk to a lot of librarians at the end of last week to get what they're seeing, because it can vary depending on the region of the state. What we're seeing is that All the Light We Cannot See is one of the biggest books that people are still reading and will be reading all throughout the summer. This is a book that I think, because it won the Pulitzer, it's just a really fantastic read. Very compelling.
I think we've talked about that on the show before. Mm-hmm. Just remind us, because it's fascinating what that's about.
World War II. It's got a very lyrical feel to it. You know, two characters who are very challenged and compelled, and you are brought right into the story. It's a really great read. I haven't read it yet. I'm on the waiting list for it. I have to let my patrons have it first. So
that's very selfless.
Yeah. Well, I'm sometimes not selfless, but this time I was, because this has been so popular. So that's one that we're seeing a lot of people read. Also, The Girl on the Train by Paula Hawkins. That's still extremely popular. Reserve lists, out of sight. I just got it. So I have just started it. It's more psychological and very, again, very compelling, very well written. I'm only in the first couple chapters of it, and I had trouble putting it down at 11 last night when I picked it up at 10:30. So I need to get some sleep.
We love it when books go on the reserve list at the libraries, because people get tired of waiting and then they come
they
to us.
They do. But that's where I think we all do this. You know, if they can't get what they want, we try to recommend other reads that are similar.
Like, yeah, talk about that a little bit more. So if I came in and I said, gee, I really want to read this, and, you know, I'm number 50 on the reserve list, you try and help me out.
Definitely. Well, first of all, we'll see if you will take it in a different format. I mean, a lot of these books are in audio format, or you can get them in ebook format. But we do what's called read-alikes. We try to figure out what about the book is compelling for you, and then we narrow it down to a couple of other titles you should try. So, for example, for All the Light We Cannot See, The English Patient is another book that would be really in that same area, very lyrical, very compelling, same setting, World War II. In the Wolf's Mouth by Adam Foulds. And even the one that I found interesting when I was doing some research on read-alikes for this one, Buddha in the Attic by Julie Otsuka. Again, it's sort of the earlier part of World War II. It has a little bit different feel as far as it's focusing on the women exclusively, these mail-order brides, Japanese mail-order brides coming in, the possibility of internment. But again, very lyrical, very compelling story centered on the World War II era. So that's the kind of thing that we do. And I know these guys do it and their bookstores, too, because people want to read. And if they can't get it when they want it, you've got to give them something else.
Michael.
Yeah. A similar phenomenon in the bookstore is, you know, what do I read next? Like, for instance, mm-hmm. after Gone Girl, you know, people say, I love this book so much. What's like it? And then, of yes. course, you know, Gillian Flynn has two other novels, Sharp Objects and what's the other one? Anyway, but you know, so the read-alike works in the bookstore too. Like with Gone Girl, and that kind of segues to my next choice for summer reading. Megan Abbott has written a whole bunch of very twisted books. She really gets inside the heads of teenage girls and young women, and you know, it's a dark, twisted world inside those heads, apparently. Her most recent novel is The Fever. It's about a character named Deanie Nash, who's a really diligent student with a close-knit family. Her brother Eli is a hockey star. Her father's a popular teacher. But then her best friend is struck by an unexplained seizure, just terrifying, in class. And the stability of the family and the town just kind of falls apart. Rumors of a hazardous outbreak of some kind spread through the school. Rumors of contagion, you know, it becomes hysterical. And but what it's really like, it's almost like the Salem Witch Trials.
Well, that's what I was thinking while you were
talking.
It
becomes like that kind of book.
And wow.
Megan Abbott, she just weaves there's just mounting dread into the narrative. And there's just kind of feeling of claustrophobia and just sort of the dark side of sensuality. And, you know, everybody loves that, right?
Wow. All right.
But anyway, and all of her books are like that. Just as with Nelson DeMille, I'm recommending a total binge reading summer with Megan Abbott because, you know, all of her books are kind of like that, set in different periods. There's a Jazz Age novel. There's one where she sort of invades the world of Raymond Chandler in 1950s Los Angeles. You know, it's... That's another summer's worth of reading.
Well, and I love that concept of binge reading. And, you know, Dan Chartrand, people will sometimes say, oh, I spent the whole weekend, you know, binge watching Breaking Bad or whatever, the whole series, because you can get it now. I mean, what about binge reading? Are you promoting that for folks?
Well, we always promote the backlist with the front list. As Michael mentioned with the Nelson DeMille, you always want to keep them going if they love an author's books. For instance, Kate Atkinson, part of the reason she's selling so well is that people have gradually fallen in love with her. And those that discover the new books then loop back. And so there's always that, you know, keep going with that author. Michael was mentioning Megan Abbott's new book. And in terms of satisfying reads, two of my staff are completely gaga about a book that's releasing tomorrow. It's called The Library at Mount Char by Scott Hawkins, and it's another creepy, dark, gory book, but also fascinating and awesome. There's a main character, Carolyn, and her brothers and sisters who were adopted by their father, in quotation marks, who has taught them each a mystical catalog in which to focus and never venture out of. When father goes missing, Carolyn and her siblings close in on the power vacuum he leaves behind. This is a great new book that's coming out
Ooh,
tomorrow.
I wish I could cue the dark music there, Dan. All right. Well, here's an email from Margaret who says, I always enjoy the summer book preview. Margaret says, I just finished an impressive biography of singer Otis Redding by Mark Ribowski. The full title is Otis Redding, Stax Records and the Transformation of Southern Soul. Margaret says the author delves into the musical, social, and racial developments of the 1950s and most significantly the late 60s when Redding peaked. She says it's fascinating, vividly told. Margaret, thanks for that recommendation. We'll take your recommendations and your questions at 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our annual summer book show, and we invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. Whether you want to recommend a book to others for summer reading or ask our guests a question about helping you find that perfect book for vacation time, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests are Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter, Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, and Lori Fisher. She's the librarian director at the Baker Free Library in Bow. Again, you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Lori, just before the break, we were talking about binge reading. Again, a lot of people like to, you know, spend a rainy weekend binge watching their favorite show on TV. Why not binge read?
We definitely see that at libraries because we tend to have a lot of the back titles, a lot of the titles that authors have previously published. So right now, I'd say that for book clubs, the one of the big books that is going out is Me Before You by JoJo Moyes, and all of her previous books, they're always going out. We have a lot of requests for them. The other one right now at our library in particular is David Baldacci's Memory Man. Is really that has the actually I checked this morning, it has the highest reserve number on it. So anything by Baldacci. So thrillers are really big in Bow, and they're big in a lot of different libraries, but particularly Baldacci right now is very hot.
So, and maybe big for the summer too.
I think so, yes.
Sort of a mystery thriller type type book. Although, Dan, you know, there isn't really a summer book. Like, it has to be escapist, either a mystery or a bodice ripper or sort of, you know, we can get a little more intellectual in the summer, can't we?
Oh, absolutely. And that's why we have nonfiction lists as well. I'm going to lead off on nonfiction with two political books that kind of parallel each other. One is The Negotiator, a memoir by George Mitchell. And the other is The Quiet Man, The Indispensable Presidency of George H.W. Bush, by our former governor and also former chief of staff, John H. Sununu. These two books actually are wonderful because they're very personal stories. They both tell sort of the story of 1988 through 1992, roughly. They match up that way. And they tell the stories of what happened and the policy discussions and battles that happened during the first President Bush's term. But they tell them in parallel ways across the aisle, and they're wonderful to read together. So I can't recommend those two books highly enough, The Negotiator by George Mitchell and The Quiet Man by our former governor, John H. Sununu.
And Michael, big biographies are popular in the summer. You just pick it up. You don't care how big it is. You're going to take it. And hopefully you finish it.
Yeah, well, there's one book that's out that doesn't necessarily need our help, but we should mention it because, well, The Wright Brothers by David McCullough, a biography of the famous brothers. He's always on the bestseller list, McCullough, with Truman or The Great Bridge or, you know, Mornings on Horseback, 1776. Every book he's ever written has been a huge bestseller. But I was thinking that, you know, sometimes people might be reluctant to pick up the one about the Wright brothers because they think they know everything they need to know about the Wright brothers. You know, a couple of guys, they built an airplane and was on a beach in North Carolina. They flew. History was changed. I learned about it in fourth grade, right? But they're wrong.
It's obviously a huge story. It's fascinating.
It's a huge story. I mean, what this is like, it's like a cultural biography. What McCullough has done here is he's taken the lives of these two really uneducated, without formal education, bicycle mechanics, and he's through them he's like depicted the entire age, just at the dawn of the age of aviation. And it's a fascinating portrait of a very kind of eccentric family, a couple of geniuses who had no help, no funding, who just kept at it.
No Kickstarter campaign.
No Kickstarter campaign for the Wright brothers. It's true.
And they had so much less to do with North Carolina than they did with Dayton, Ohio.
That's right. They're Ohio boys. That's right. You know, it's a great, fun book. And there's a lot of detail in this book that you just don't learn in your fourth grade, you know, synopsis of the Wright brothers. For instance, the first time they flew over New York, they had a canoe strapped to the bottom of the airplane just in case of a water landing. You know, it's just fun details like that that really make this a great read for the summer.
Any other big biographies you'd recommend, Lori, for people coming in who love American history?
Well, I would definitely second Michael's recommendation on the Wright brothers. That's been really big. Anything by David McCullough, and particularly the audiobook for this, is very good. So if you're more inclined to want to listen to a book or you have a long car trip, that's a good one. I would also suggest H is for Hawk by Helen MacDonald. That's been really big among libraries. This is it's a really interesting biography. It's a biography of T.H. White, who wrote The Once and Future King, which I think a lot of people read while they were in school. But this is also a biography about Helen and her struggle with grief and loss. And again, it's a really interesting meld. And I think a lot of people, when they first pick it up, they get sucked in. They get sucked into it. And that's not easy to do sometimes with nonfiction. So if you're looking for something a little bit different, probably H is for Hawk is a good one. And then there's the typical ones that, again, continue to be popular. And we're still with the World War II theme here with Boys in the Boat and Unbroken.
Oh, yeah. Well, 70th anniversary this year. So it's definitely a theme we're seeing. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. It's our summer book show. We'd love to hear from you with your questions about what to take on vacation this summer or your recommendations. 1-800-892-6477. Kristen is up first from Concord. Hi, Kristen. Go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Hey, good morning, Laura.
Morning.
I'm calling about an author that's become a new favorite of mine in talking about binge reading. Her name is Tana French. She's an Irish author, mystery writer, and just great character development. And what she does is in her first book, she's got a primary and secondary character. And then in the second book, her secondary character becomes sort of the lead character. And it goes on from there. Her most recent book is The Secret Place. And it's about a murder that takes place on the campus of a girls' boarding school. And what I really loved about it was that the campus of the school itself is really a character in the book.
Wow. All right. Yeah. Kristen, thank you.
Beautiful. You're welcome.
And Michael, I think you've mentioned Tana French before.
Every time she has a new book, we bring her up on the air pretty much because, you know, I love those books about the Dublin murder squad. Such good writing.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff.
Thank you, Kristen, for the call. Again, you can join us 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Here's an email from Jennifer. She says, look forward to this exchange every year. She says, if there's time, will you please ask about any great reads for those middle school, early teen readers? Want to have lots of great reads for my 10 and 13-year-olds for summer vacation. Many thanks. You're welcome, Jennifer. And let's definitely talk about that. As people who listen to this show know, I've got two readers in my house as well who I'm trying to always keep reading. So, Dan, why don't you start off? But, Lori, I want to hear from you, too.
I'm just going to rip through some titles. I'm not going to do so much of a plot description. But here's some great middle grade reads for the summer. The Witch's Boy by Kelly Barnhill. A new book out called Circus Mirandus by Cassie Beasley. Of course, we've got our Exeter author, Paul Durham, who's written two volumes of the Luck Ugly series. And finally, Pam Munoz Ryan has a new book called Echo. It's a novel, and it's being recommended by Alice, who works on our staff. And that book is probably the best-selling middle-grade fiction work we have.
Okay, and these are hefty books. These aren't for little kids. These are for at least, what? Fourth, fifth grade and
this
up.
This is the 8 to 12 age range. So okay. Middle grade readers,
all right.
Of these.
Well, and you mentioned, I know you didn't want to give a whole biography of each, and I appreciate that, Dan, but The Witch's Boy, tell us a little bit about that, because that's gotten a lot of attention.
Right. That's being recommended by Jill in our store, and it's a spectacular story of ancient gods, a mysterious prophecy, unlikely heroes, and courageous deeds. It's the tale of the last bit of magic in the world and what happens when those charged with its safekeeping, those who wish to steal it and those who desire to be free of it are thrust together in an enchanted forest.
Wow.
You'll be enthralled as Barnhill's richly drawn characters are tested and transformed by the power of words, love, and friendship. Don't miss this one. If your kids loved Harry Potter, they'll love The Witch's Boy by Kelly Barnhill.
All right. And Lori, I'm sure you've got lots of parents like me coming in saying, help, help, help.
Yes. One of the newer books that we are recommending is 14th Goldfish by Jennifer Holm for grades 4 to 6. This girl's scientist grandfather has discovered a way to reverse aging and is consequently turned into a teenager, making for complicated relationships.
Wait, the grandfather is turned into a teenager?
Yes, it's hysterically funny, but it does provide food for thought. I mean, would you really want to be able to age backwards? It'll appeal to both boys and girls, which is really great, and it's very good on audio. So that's another one to think about. If your kid's not into reading a book, get it on audio and try it out in the car. Two other books, Bunker Diary by Kevin Brooks. This is a little bit older. This is more young adult, but there's a lot of crossover. 16-year-old Linus Weems is a street person. Since leaving his wealthy father's home, he's kidnapped and taken to an underground bunker where he is soon joined by five others ranging in age from 9 to 70 who are alternately cared for and tortured by their unseen captor. It's really dark and edgy, but you can't put it down. And our children's librarian said that it reminded her of Room by Emma Donoghue, but without the happy ending. Yeah, Room for Kids.
Great, okay.
Yeah, I know. But see, the kids like this kind of stuff. So, and the last one I'll suggest is I Kill the Mockingbird by Paul Encampera. Best friends Lucy, Elena, and Michael received their summer reading list, and To Kill a Mockingbird's on it, and they're excited about it, but not everybody's excited about it. So they hatch a plot to get the entire town talking about it. It's a smart, funny book, and it's pretty good timing as far as publication of this because we've got the prequel to To Kill a Mockingbird coming out in July. So if you want to get your kids interested in that book, this may be a gateway to do that.
Well, and thank you for the perfect segue, Lori, because I did want to ask you about this, Michael. Lori's absolutely right. One of the big, big books that a lot of people are talking about is this unknown book by Harper Lee that was just discovered last year.
Yeah, it's It's kind of a sequel to To Kill a Mockingbird. It's actually the first version of the story where she wrote this back in the 50s, and nobody's seen it yet. But the story behind it is she wrote it back in the 50s, and it's just a different approach to some of the same material where, you know, the adult scout goes back to her hometown and talks to her father about the events that took place in To Kill a Mockingbird. And I can't wait to read it. You know, To Kill a Mockingbird is just such an important book in my life as a reader. I reread it once every year or two. And, you know, and it's actually kind of a book for kids, too. It's the first YA crossover in a lot of ways.
Really?
Yeah, well, you know, back when it was first published, Flannery O'Connor said, you know, I wonder if all the people who are talking about this book so glowingly understand that it's a book written for children. And she meant it a little bit as a put down. But actually, you know, in today's environment, certainly what we're looking for is that YA crossover because they're so popular, books that appeal to the kids and to the grown-ups. You know, it's a great genre, and that's To Kill a Mockingbird now. We can't wait to see this new take on the story.
And remind us, what's the name of the new book that nobody's seen, even though it was written many years ago?
Go Set a Watchman.
Go Set a Watchman. Lots of anticipation around this, Dan. At your store?
Absolutely. We have so many people lining up to get their copy. And as Michael said, it's kind of the earlier version of what became To Kill a Mockingbird. But that doesn't really matter. People have been waiting for a book by Harper Lee for so long. And even if it's sort of an earlier version and it's still the same characters and it's roughly the same story, it's almost like getting the backstory.
Yeah.
And that's why people are so excited about it. There's been so many great books that provide backstory to classic tales. And this is sort of the backstory from the author herself, which is wonderful.
Okay. True confessions right here on the radio. I have not read To Kill a Mockingbird.
Expressions of shock fill the studio.
Do you want my list of what I haven't read? It's as long as my
Everybody's got a list of what they haven't read.
I feel guilty about this, especially with the new book coming out. But
everybody's
part
of being a reader is feeling a little bit of guilt for the books you haven't gotten to, and that you just transform that guilt into ambition, right?
I mean, the audiobook of To Kill a Mockingbird.
And then watch the movie.
Okay.
It's never too late. Look, I've never read a scrap of Trollope. You know, I've only read one novel by Rushdie, read two novels by Garcia Marquez. There's a whole world of, you know, there's a few by Dickens I haven't touched. Everybody's got guilty secrets. Apparently, I don't have secrets anymore.
I was going to say, we're having true confessions on here.
All right, so that's a big deal coming out later this summer. Again, you can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Chris is joining us from Kittery, Maine. Hi, Chris. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Hi, Pana. How are you?
Good.
I just thought I'd phone and recommend a book. It was published in 1995, but it's a wonderful, wonderful book for children and adults alike. And because of the new Jurassic Park movie, I thought it would be just absolutely wonderful, again, to revisit it for the summer. It's called Raptor Red, and it's by the novelist Robert T. Baker, who was a paleontologist, one of the top ones in the world, and he was a consultant on special effects for the original Jurassic Park movie. Actually, Sam Neill in the movie was based on him. And what it's about a Utahraptor. 120 million years ago in the trial she goes through, she loses her mate and having to work her way through this prehistoric world and find another partner and all the trials and tribulations and just fascinating insights to different creatures. You're the novelist from the dinosaur's point of view.
Yeah, wow. So the main character is a female raptor.
Yes.
Who loses her boyfriend.
Red. Sorry.
That's great, Chris. Thank you so much for calling. Dan, go ahead.
It's Watership Down, moved to prehistoric times.
Yeah, oh, that's great. Nice. Chris, thank you very much. Again, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And by the way, all the books recommended during this show, including that one, Chris, will be put later on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. So if you missed one of the titles that we're talking about, no worries. Just go to the website later. Check it out, nhpr.org/exchange. Everything we mentioned during this hour and the lists from our guests. You can join us now at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Now, all of you, I'm sure, also get requests from your patrons about local authors. People like to read stuff that's based in New England. What do you recommend to people, Lori, for local authors, people from New Hampshire or New England?
Well, I actually, you know, we have a person on staff who does a lot of our readers' advisory, particularly for local authors. I personally have not read a lot of local authors, so except for, I have to say, some romance novels. So that is my secret. I like to read romance novels. That's my summer reading. So I'm actually rereading a lot of Kristen Higgins, who's a Massachusetts author, and she just recently had a new one come out. But for newer local authors, I think these two guys better take that one.
Okay, and go ahead, Michael, you first.
Okay, let's talk about Cy Montgomery. Cy lives in Hancock, New Hampshire, with her husband, who's also a writer, Howard Mansfield. And Cy is a naturalist. She wrote books like The Good, Good Pig, Birdology, Spell of the Tiger. She's a very lyrical writer. She's an adventurer. She goes places to encounter these animals in their environment. Her latest book is called The Soul of an Octopus, and it's a little bit of a departure because she's not going to far-flung lands. She went to the New England Aquarium down in Boston, and she got to know the octopus. And when you say getting to know the octopus, you say, well, you know, how can you really get to know an octopus?
Yeah, that then was my question,
not,
but yeah.
It turns out, even though they're separated by a half a billion years of evolution from us, they're highly intelligent creatures. You know, they play games. They play tricks on humans. They hide. You know, when they're in the wild, they're a little more suspicious of everybody, and they're not as nice. But once they're in a safe environment, you know, they become
they relax.
You're able to communicate with them in these strange ways. You know, it's like science fiction in a way, and she conveys this so wonderfully in the book. You know, these are creatures that have three hearts, and like
really?
two-thirds of their neurons aren't even in their brains. They're stretched out along their arms. They're totally alien to us. If aliens landed and like lived in the sea, they might be like the octopus. You know, it's strange to encounter that type of intelligence, and she renders it so wonderfully in the book. It's captivating. It's called The Soul of an Octopus. These creatures, and I think part of Cy's mission is to explain to people that animals have consciousness, have emotions, you know, have empathy in a lot of ways, you know, that they're not so different from us, and we better realize it before it's too late.
Wow, that's fascinating. I mean, who knew? Who knew? All right, we will talk more. I'll ask you about local authors too, Dan, after a short break, and we'll take your calls. Lots of folks who want to join us at 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, an annual favorite, it's our summer book show. We're hearing about your favorite reads for the summer vacation season and getting some ideas if you need some help finding that perfect vacation book. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And before we go back to our listeners, Dan Chartrand, local authors.
Well, I just want to mention one book that's coming out in August. It's by our Senator Shaheen's daughter, Stephanie Shaheen. The book is called Ellie and Coach, and it's subtitled Diabetes, The Fight for My Daughter's Life and the Dog Who Changed Everything. And this is an amazing book about her very brave and courageous teenage daughter who was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. She's allowing her story to be told, which is remarkable to me. When I was a teenager, I wanted to crawl under a rock and hide. This young woman, Ellie, is so brave. She's allowing her story to be told about not just her diabetes, but also the amazing service dog, Coach, who basically does this incredible thing. He tells her when she's out of range.
Wow.
And it's just provided so much relief to the entire family. This dog is at the very center of their family now, and Stephanie has decided to tell the story of this book. It's incredible. I can't wait for it to come out. I can't wait to talk to my patrons about it.
Michael?
Yeah, I read this too. And, you know, it's just amazing that, you know, all the medical equipment we have out there, no matter how advanced the technology is, it can't match up what a dog can do. The dog has such an incredible sense of smell and a sense of empathy with the humans in its family. You know, this dog could sense when Ellie was out of range when she was in the shower behind a closed door.
That's amazing.
It's an amazing story. I can't wait for it to come out.
Well, here's an email that came in. We all talked to earlier about different gaps in our literary backgrounds, and everybody's missing a book or two that they feel like they should have read. This person didn't give a name, but it says, to Laura on Not Reading To Kill a Mockingbird, gasp. Okay, sorry. I know what I need to read this summer.
Whatever. You just need to take an afternoon off. You won't be able to stop.
You'll I can't wait now,
and
actually.
Then all the guilt will be gone.
There you go. All right, let's go back to our listeners. And maybe there's a book that you want to call in and say, I never read it. Help me out. Reeve is in Wolfboro. Hi, go ahead, Reeve.
I'm going to recommend, and this is actually a lovely segue from several of the things you've been saying, a book that is almost like three books in one. It's called Natural Born Heroes, and it is by the same author, Christopher McDougall, who wrote Born to Run. It is, okay, so one part of the book is a recanting of all of the information we know about how to be an athlete. It's fascinating. So some are people who are interested in, like, getting fitter. We'll find the whole diet recommendations, which are not really diet at all, will be fascinating. The second part of it is how to move your body in a completely different and very un-American way, which is fascinating also. And it's all set in the backdrop of a World War II band of hillmen and shepherds from Crete, on the island of Crete, who ran circles around the Germans.
Wow.
So it's got kind of everything, and you'll feel so inspired afterwards. I am. I'm not a runner, and I'm actually starting to run a few steps. I'm shocked.
You're going to head out and run as soon as you finish this phone call.
And the history is just amazing. But,
all right.
Yeah.
Reeve, thank you very much. And like I said, everything that's mentioned during this show, we'll put it up on our website. So if folks missed that particular title that you recommended, no worries. We'll put it up on the website, nhpr.org/exchange. Let's go to Audrey in Manchester. Hi, Audrey. Go ahead. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. I was actually calling to recommend some books that not everybody's very much into, but I grew up in Lawrence. And I had a really hard time trying to find books that resonated with me. These two books really opened doors for me. The first one was called The Coldest Winter Ever, and it was by Sister Solja. And the other one was named Monster. And I can't really remember who wrote it, but it's very hard not to find those two titles if you look them up. They're basically about children that grew up in very low-income situations in inner cities. And though the material can be a little dark, it's certainly not gory. But, it certainly resonated with how my lifestyle was a lot different. And I really couldn't get into To Kill a Mockingbird either. So I feel you there.
And it's not that I couldn't get into it. I just never, I don't know, got around to it. So these are for young adults, Audrey.
Yes, they're for young adults. They're certainly low income. They have a lot of gang stuff in it. But if they were just so blatantly honest with the description and how these children live their lives, that it really hit very close to home for me. So.
Great. Lori, thank you so much. Dan, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say that one of the things I love about being a bookseller, and I'm sure it's true for Michael and Lori as well, is you can find a book for anyone to address anyone's situation. And that's wonderful, and it's egalitarian, and it's just one of the best things about what we do. So I just wanted to say that and thank her for her recommendation.
Yeah, Michael?
Monsters by Walter Dean Myers. He was a great voice for disaffected youth, you know, telling the stories from disadvantaged communities.
You know, a couple times our caller mentioned this, and you guys have mentioned as well, darker books for young adults. Lori, there's been this long trend of dystopian, post-apocalyptic, you know, Hunger Games, everybody against each other. You never know who's your enemy or your friend. Is that still big?
It's going to be big for a little while longer because the last movie for the Hunger Games series will be coming out in November. So we're still seeing the stuff move. It's still going out in libraries. There's still reserve lists for stuff. So it is waning, though. I do believe it is waning as far as in the publishing realm. They're not publishing as much as they were.
Well, it's been a good long run, hasn't it?
It has.
Yeah. So I heard about another trend. Dan or Michael, maybe you, Dan. Steampunk. Is that going to replace dystopia?
Steampunk is actually, it's been around for 10 to 20 years. And it's this wonderful sort of melding of punk, of technology, and of the Victorian era. So it takes a lot of
fantasy
things,
and magic.
Yeah, but it takes a lot of things and it drops it back into the Victorian era. And so you've got this wonderful sort of looking forward, looking backward, anachronisms that are intentional. It's really wonderful. It's a wonderful mashup of a bunch of stuff. And it's got its fans. It's wonderful.
Michael?
We have a book bag at the store that we sell that has images of like Emily Dickinson and other 19th century writers with mohawks and piercings. And that captures the spirit of steampunk.
All right. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Alice is joining us from Elliott. Hi, Alice. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi. Thank you. The book I want to recommend is Lexicon by Max Berry, which is sort of an action book. It's not my usual read. I'm more into historical fiction, nonfiction. And this is a page turner. It is about the language and using language as weapons with a sort of group of people that have studied this and have people all over the world. And so it is a thriller, but ultimately a love story. And the characters are just so human. There's a lot of humor in it. It's a great, great book. And I've already moved on to his next book, which is Machine Man. And again, these are not the sorts of books I would read, but I'm hooked. So
okay.
Great summer reads, and they'd be great for teens or adults, I think.
Thank you very much, Alice. We appreciate the call. And let's take one more. This is Jeffrey in Dover. And Jeffrey, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I wanted to recommend an author for binge reading.
Cool.
My book club, one of our gentlemen gave us the book Hardboiled Wonderland and the End of the World by an author named Haruki Murakami, and I had never heard of him. And it's this kind of Japanese surrealism that just totally captured me. So I picked up a couple of his other books, just finished 1Q84, which was great, but the one I really want everyone to read is called Kafka on the Shore. Beautifully written and just wonderful. I wanted to put his name out there.
Well, Jeffrey, thank you so much. And I don't know if any of you want to address this, but a couple of years ago, sort of Swedish authors were, you know, very popular. I have seen more Japanese authors making it to the very tops of the list here in the United States. Anybody want to comment on that? Michael?
Well, I think, you know, the United States is not known for welcoming works in translation, unfortunately. I just think that finally we're understanding that it's a wider world out there and we're allowing, you know, ourselves to be captivated by talents from all over the globe.
Okay. Thank you very much for that call, Jeffrey. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. I have a couple emails, too, that I want to share with you. If I don't get to them, I want to let those folks know that we will also put their recommendations on the website. So everything that gets mentioned either on the air or through the web will be put together. But I did want to bring in another voice into our conversation. NHPR's All Things Considered host Peter Biello is with us. And in addition to his hosting duties, Peter started a new project called Bookshelf. And we're going to hear more about that. Hi, Peter.
Good morning.
So what's Bookshelf?
Bookshelf is a segment that airs every other week on All Things Considered. And it features interviews. Right now, it features interviews with authors exclusively from New Hampshire or writing about New Hampshire. But as this project evolves, it's possible that we could become a more regional program and talk to authors from Maine and Vermont and Massachusetts.
Sort of this affinity for Northern New England authors in general.
We'll start in the Granite State and see where we can go from there.
Yeah. So why did you decide to do this in addition to everything else you do?
Well, because I love literature and because I'm interested in when I took this job as All Things Considered host, I wanted to create a well-rounded program. So we will hear, of course, news about politics, but also about the news that stays news, and that's literature.
So how does it work and how's it going so far? Is it something that you pick the authors or do listeners contribute ideas or how does that work?
Well, I pick the authors among the pile of books that New Hampshire authors have been sending me, and they're all so great. So I've got plenty of books to work with. But it's also not just a straightforward interview. It's a chance for listeners throughout the region to do sort of what they're doing right now on The Exchange, which is email their suggestions that I can then relay to other listeners. The email address books@nhpr.org is up all the time, and that comes to me and the producer here, and we take a look at your suggestions and send them along. And we also ask each of the authors who comes to the program to give a top five list of books that they think other listeners should read. And it doesn't have to be New Hampshire authors. It could be anything, for example.
Oh, so that's cool. So yeah. You interview a New Hampshire author, and then you ask him or her, by the way, what do you like to read?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. For example, Alan Lelchuk of Dartmouth College, he was talking about his book Searching for Wallenberg last week, and he recommended short stories by Flannery O'Connor and Chekhov, and it was nice to hear those kind of recommendations.
So what are some of the books that have caught your eye? I know that you're really new into this, but are there hidden gems, Peter, that you're finding out about that don't make the bestseller lists but make compelling reading?
That's exactly the kind of book that we're interested in here, because the bestsellers always get the attention, right? But local authors, not so much, and especially if they come out of small presses that don't get a lot of attention or if they're short runs. For example, one author that I've spoken with and who will be appearing on the bookshelf, Robin McLean, she wrote a short story collection called Reptile House. She recently appeared at Gibson's Books, and she's on a nationwide book tour now, and her short stories are incredible. They are, some of them are dark, some of them are funny, but not funny haha, just funny like, oh, wow, that's really interesting that that character would choose to do that. And so we had a really great conversation. I'm looking forward to running that one.
Okay. Peter, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
That's NHPR's All Things Considered host. He has started a new program called Bookshelf. You can check it out at books@nhpr.org. Thank you, Peter. Dan, did you want to jump in there?
I just wanted to thank Peter. This is such a great thing for libraries and booksellers. When something hits New Hampshire Public Radio, we're going to see readers coming in looking for those books. So thank you so much for what you're doing.
Here's an email that just came in. This is from Emily. She's in Hampstead. She's a trustee of the Hampstead Public Library. She says, Marcia Strykowski wrote two books for ages 9 and up, Call Me Amy and Amy's Choice. Emily says both are great stories set in New England, great reads for middle school ages. And that gets back to Jennifer's email earlier. So there's a couple more for you, Jennifer. Go ahead, Michael.
I just wanted to say that I didn't really pitch in when we were talking about books for kids, but one of our best sellers at the store, I should point out, is a historical novel called The Runaway's Gold by Emily Burak.
Yes, that's new, isn't it?
It's brand new. It's published by Abrams, which is also the publisher of the Wimpy Kids books. And she lives in Hopkinton, New Hampshire, so you should have her on the show. Yeah, it's been a runaway bestseller for our kids at the bookstore.
Isn't that on the Great Stoneface list, the new one? I think it is.
I think so. Yes.
Is the Great Stoneface list sort of New Hampshire authors for
it's
kids?
It's a middle grade reading list where the kids read the books all year and then they vote the winner at the end. It's a great program.
It's developed by the librarians throughout the state.
Libraries have they put these books on reserve, so they should be available all summer. We buy multiple copies of everyone on the list.
Oh, because you know.
Oh, we know.
And kids don't want to wait.
No, they don't.
And the sales in bookstores on Great Stoneface lists are off the charts.
Yep.
I did want to ask you about graphic novels, what we used to call comic books. Lori, now what's your feeling on that for summer books?
Oh, they're definitely high on the list, especially for your reluctant readers. It's the gateway to getting them to read bigger books and more classic books. And a lot of the classics, some of the classics have been made into graphic novels. So we have a whole section of graphic novels. We have a whole section of manga, which is another format that Japanese in origin that a lot of kids gravitate towards too.
Very
who are
popular.
Reluctant readers. So we see a lot of that in the libraries.
Have libraries been beefing up their collections of graphic novels and so forth, given the popularity over the last couple of years?
Yes, definitely. And like I said, we want people to read, whether it doesn't matter the format, whether it's digital, whether it's an audiobook, or whether it's a graphic novel. We want people to read. And there are we have books that are graphic novels for adults, not just for kids.
Yeah. You know, some parents think graphic novels are bubblegum. I'm not one of them. But what do you guys think?
Well, with graphic novels, I have two that, and this is a huge area for us. The first one is more for adults. It's The Thrilling Adventures of Lovelace and Babbage, the mostly true story of the first computer by Sidney Padua. But for kids, there's a great new graphic novel called Nimona. It's goofy but also dramatic, and it features a girl who's a shapeshifter who joins forces with a villain named Blackheart.
Wow. Okay. Once again, cue the dark music.
Nimona.
Well, I love the comic books, to be honest. I mean, one of my first passions as a reader when I was a small kid was comic books. And, you know, the golden age of Marvel really was back when I was a kid, back in the late 60s with Fantastic Four and Thor, you know, the Silver Surfer.
Well, and all those movies are out now, so why not?
It's paradise for me.
So here's the toughest question I'm going to ask you guys all hour. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Sure.
I'll throw it to Michael first.
Uh-oh.
What are you reading over your summer vacation?
Ah, okay. Well, that's easy enough. I'm reading a lot.
Yeah,
actually, right now I'm in the middle of the new Jonathan Franzen book that's coming out in September. It's called Purity, and it's you know, he's a fantastic storyteller. He's kind of sometimes there's people in the literary community that don't speak nicely about Jonathan Franzen, but I think he's a wonderful storyteller. So that's what I'm reading right now. And after that, it's going to be 8,000 pages of My Struggle by Karl Ove Knausgård, and I'm pronouncing that wrong, but I can't speak Norwegian. He's written sort of a slash memoir novel that's been compared to Proust.
Wow, 8,000 pages.
It's at least, it might be a zillion, I don't know.
Okay, well, how about you, Laurie, real quick? What are you reading?
Nonfiction, I'm reading The Goddess Pose, The Audacious Life of Indra Devi. I'm a yoga teacher besides being a librarian, so this and that is by Michelle Goldberg. I'm really excited about that. I just started it. I have my trashy, well, it's not trashy. I have my romance novel, This Heart of Mine. I'm reading Brenda Novak, but I'm also looking forward to Finders Keepers by Stephen King.
Okay. Is that the new one?
Yes, this, that
this
is
year.
The new
okay.
one.
Okay. All right. And real quick, Dan.
I'm reading Jackson Land by Steve Inskeep. One of my booksellers has recommended this to me. And that's my great summer read.
That's the big fat bio of the summer. All of you, this has been great. Thank you so much for all the advice and recommendations and for being here. I really appreciate it.
It's been great.
It's been great. Thank you.
Thanks, Laura.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.